celebrating Kwanzaa on Mandrake Society Radio. This is J.W. Richard of Mandrake Society Radio Podcast, introducing day two of the Kwanzaa series for 2007. Thank you for joining me. Today's tenet is Kujichagulia, or self-determination, and I'm pleased to introduce T.A. Hines. She is a writer and blogger who's lived in London, Chicago, Amsterdam, Los Angeles, and The Hague. She is a contributing blogger at Nerve Magazine, host and producer of the internet radio talk show Dating Roadkill, and editor-publisher of the blog FunkyBrownChick.com. I have links at MandrakeSocietyRadio.com for you to enjoy and check out more of her work. Right now, here's T.A. Hines on Mandrake Society Radio Podcast.
I'm a little bit promiscuous when it comes to holidays. I'll celebrate pretty much anybody's holiday, especially if it has gifts. But I'm definitely Christian, and I celebrate Christmas with my family. And I've celebrated Kwanzaa. I've gone to Seders. I've gone to Mass. I've been in mosque and different things of that nature. Basically, the way I see it is like this. If people want to get together to celebrate family, community, caring for each other, celebrating the love that they have for each other, what have you, that's fine. That has no religious boundaries, ethnic boundaries, or things of that nature. So yeah, I'm a little bit of a whore when it comes to holidays. I'll celebrate anybody. So today, as most of you know, is the second day of Kwanzaa. And the second day, the second principle of Kwanzaa is called Kujichagulia. Try and say that very fast. Kujichagulia. What that means is self-determination. It's to define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. And I'm going to do a podcast on this. This is a 15-minute podcast. If you're anything like me, you've got a short attention span. And so instead of speaking directly into your lovely ears for 15 minutes straight, I'm actually going to break this into several different vignettes, like different acts, if you will. Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, Act 4. None of them will be more than, like, say, 4 or 5 minutes, so it'll keep you on your toes. Act 1, The Nomadic African-American. I was born in the south side of Chicago in Michael Reese Hospital. And when my parents divorced when I was 2 years old, we moved to central Illinois, my sister, my mother, and I. So half of my childhood is characterized by seeing those yellow and green cornfields in the middle of nowhere. And then for reasons that I won't explain on this podcast but reserve the right to explain in a book later, we moved to Mississippi. And my sister and I were there for the other half of my childhood, basically. So and I just remember the smells of the South and the culture of the South. I remember my feet touching the really, really hot asphalt that had been warmed by the sun, and the fact that everyone there told me that I talked like a white girl because I had a northern, or as they said, Yankee accent. We were in a small town, and there weren't very many people who moved there. People who lived in that town live there because their people and their people's people had lived there for years. And so I really kind of felt as an outsider of sorts because, one, we had moved in the middle of the school year, and so I didn't have friends that everyone else had buddied with in the beginning of the year. And then, two, because they were defining me and I defined myself as a northerner. Like, I'd been raised up north and the rest of my family was up north, so anyway, so that was like that for a while until we moved back to Illinois once situations changed back at home up north. So there I was back in Illinois again, and I stayed there for a while, and I went to college actually in Illinois for 2 years until I left for Los Angeles. And I was in Los Angeles for about a year, year and a half, doing school there, and then I decided to come back to Illinois. So I did another year back in Illinois, and when I graduated, I knew that I didn't want to live in that small town in Illinois, and I knew that I didn't want to take a job that just paid money but wasn't very appealing for me or didn't make me feel alive. But so I knew what I didn't want to do, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. And a friend who's an extremely good friend even to this day told me, if you don't know what you want to do, if you don't know where you're going, and if you feel like you have nothing to lose, this is a great time to try something that you've always wanted to do, because again, what do you have to lose? And I thought, you know what, she's right. So with a one-way ticket and a backpack, I went to England. And I stayed there. I studied there. I eventually worked there. I was a bartender there. And I remember just meeting so many different people from all over the world and just, I don't know, one story, this is the story I'll tell, in particular, is meeting this one guy out at a club one night. He had dark brown chocolate skin. He was from Ghana. And he asked me, "Where are you from?" And I told him, I said, "I'm African-American. I said, I am black, grew up in the U.S., whatever, I'm over here working, blah, blah, blah." You know, he was cute. He was trying to be a little flirty and stuff like that, too. And he said to me, "You're what?" And I said, "I'm African-American." And he said, "Where in Africa are your parents from?" And I said, "No." I said, "Actually, my mom is originally from Mississippi. They moved to Illinois." So I go on this long story and ramble as I want to do. And so he said, "Well, who in your family is from Africa?" And so I was explaining. I was like, "Well, you know what it's like." And it's like, "No. No one in my family is directly from Africa, like, right now. But, I mean, obviously we came over from Africa, slavery, the whole history of the U.S., blah, 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 that stuff." And he looked at me, and he said, "What you are is confused." He said, "You're American." And I remember just, one, being very pissed because I thought, "You don't fucking know me. How are you going to talk to me like this?" But then, two, for the first time, I really defined myself that way, too. And it was the first time that I realized that of everyone that I had met from all over the world while I was living over there in London, the people that I had the most in common with were other Americans, like the Filipino guy who was from San Diego, the white chick from New England. And I remember just thinking the history, this from slavery, civil rights movement, things like that, history that affected the lives of black folks and white folks and everyone else here in the U.S., that's our uniquely American history. We're the ones who went through it, and our families are the ones who went through it through time. And the holidays that we celebrate, the languages that we speak. So I remember that guy asking me, the African man from Ghana, "Well, what language do you speak at home, and what holidays do you celebrate?" I'm like, "I speak English, and celebrate Christmas, my fucking birthday, what's it to you?" And so I just remember thinking that, like, I had to leave the U.S. to finally really feel like I am, at my core, American. Act 2, self-definition. I thought it'd be interesting if we took a voyeuristic peek into the lives of others who are talking about self-definition, defining ourselves, things of that nature. As much as I would love to believe that you guys would like to listen to me drone on for the entire duration of this podcast, I thought it might be a good idea to bring on different voices as well and, like, listen to what others might have to say about self-determination and the right to define ourselves and things of that nature, because this isn't something that only relates to me or even to the black community for that respect. This is something that I think is just a very human need to be able to say who you are to the world and to have that validated. So this woman, Vanessa, is a Jewish spoken word poet, and I wanted to take you behind the scenes and into her set. So here you are.
I meet a guy in a bar that's cute. He wears L.L. Bean duck boots and guards my bar stool when I have to go pee. He asks me out to dinner for the following Tuesday. I decline. Tuesday is Yom Kippur. I will be fasting. "You're Jewish? Wow. You don't look Jewish. You don't act Jewish." And he says it in this tone that sounds like he's complimenting me. And I say nothing. I say nothing when which combined with a flirty smile translates to thank you. I say nothing because I'm drunk on denial coladas. I say nothing because I got a contact high of someone's anti-Semitic crack pipe. I say nothing because somewhere along my life's graph, I've been swayed to believe that being Jewish is not too cool, not too sexy. I say nothing because I'm in a deep sleep, a snow white coma. I suddenly remember the exodus of the Israelites, and I walk barefoot from the wall in the desert to the bar and look for the guy with the duck boots. He's not there, but I have something to say to him. He's not there, but I have a response to his statement. He's not there, so I'll make a soapbox and reenact the scene. Bartender, tell me I don't look Jewish. Tell me I don't act Jewish. Because I'm thinking, I'm saying, what does Jewish look like to you? Should I fiddle on a fucking roof for you? Should I humor you with oy veys and refuse to pay? Oh, because you know how we like to Jew you down. Jew you down, I'd like to throw you down. Because I walked here long miles on hot sand to publicly repent my sins because I almost forgot. 6 million die without having the option of giggling on bar stools. Almost forgot that concentration camp survivors are now a dying generation that my children may never have the sensation of seeing in person. And if you must see me as that blood-sucking Jew, see me as that pesty mosquito that bites and sucks the prejudice right out of you. Don't get it twisted because you might live in New York City where you can buy knishes at stands for $1.50. We only make up 2.2% of the American population, you see. Many in other parts of the country are not feeling me. I'm not trying to compete in a contest of oppression. Just feel the need to mention the miserable tension I feel in my heart when people say things like, the blacks and the Jews, oh, they just don't get along. Just feel the need to say I can't be the only exception to the rule. Just the one right now using my poetry as a tool to maybe change just one heart tonight. Cause I'm the Hebrew mamita, long lost daughter of Abraham and Sarah. The sexy oy vey, matzah eating, chutzpah having, non-cheaping, non-conspiracizing, always questioning, hip-hop listening, Torah scroll reading, all people loving, pride-filled Jewish girl. Bigging up all people who are a little miffed because someone tells you you don't look like or act like your people. Impossible, because you are your people.
No more acting, actually. This is the part where we're at the end of the lovely podcast, my sweeties. So it's time for credits. This is where I want to give big, drippy kisses to everyone who made this podcast possible. And the first big, drippy kiss goes to J.W. Richard, of course, from Mandrake Society Radio, for suggesting that I create this podcast for Kujichagulia during Kwanzaa. Mandrake Society, make love, give birth, change your community is the tagline, and I'm all about the making love part and the change of the community part. Giving birth, I'm there in that one too, as long as giving birth refers to birth to ideas and things like that or what have you. Big trippy kiss goes out to Magnitude, the online library of original music and broadcast media, audiovisual and web productions. The pod-safe music that you heard during the podcast today includes Italian music from the 17th century, as well as songs from an album called Phoenix by Ambient Technology. Magnitude, gotta love those folks. Their tagline is, we are not evil. And no, they are not, so check them out, magnitude.com. Also, if you like the spoken word poem that you heard, that is actually by a woman named Vanessa. To learn more about Vanessa, please visit her online. Her website is www.hebrewmamita.com. The poem that you heard actually was edited for time, so if you want to listen to the whole thing, you can hear that, as well as all of her other work on MySpace under her full name. So it's just myspace.com/Vanessa, and I'll spell the last name for you, H-I-D-A-R-Y. And so you can find her there. And then finally, last but not least, big juicy kisses filled with tongue and all that good stuff to the people who are familiar with this voice that you're hearing here right now. I'm always incredibly super duper thankful to the people who listen to my podcast and read my words on my own blog, which is of course funkybrownchick.com, or various blogs that I write for and magazines and things of that nature. So Thank you. Huge hugs and kisses for the support. And now a word from Corey.
Hi, I'm Corey Doctorow of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. If you speak your mind in your blog or podcast, you need EFF. Protect your free speech rights at EFF.org.
And we'll leave it at that. Thanks again, and goodbye.